Sunday, January 23rd, 2011. This is the Sales Playbook Podcast. I'm your host, Paul Castain from YourSalesPlaybook.com. And today we're going to talk about how to handle Q&A effectively. Now, I know what you're thinking. You're thinking, you know, handling Q&A is great for people who are into public speaking and go around doing the lecture circuit, but it really doesn't apply to us salespeople. Well, the best rebuttal I could possibly offer to you would be that things have changed dramatically in sales. And what I mean by that is that more and more of these decisions are being made by committee. Now, again, we don't have to be Tony Robbins to dazzle the committee, but we certainly need to know how to control the situation without being over the top controlling. And there's a huge difference between the two. So I have six tips for you today to help you do it effectively, ranging from how to transition into that Q&A to how to wrap up the Q&A. A lot of points in between, a lot of things to cover. Let's get down to business. The first item, how to transition into your Q&A. The best advice I could possibly offer you on this comes from Dale Carnegie. They have just an awesome public speaking program. One of the things that they suggest, and again, it's so simple. I love the simple things because we'll do them. The bit of advice that they offer is just say, we have time for questions. Who has the first question? Again, we have time for questions. Who has the first question? Now, right about now, it can get weird because, and I know you've probably been there, you kind of open it up for questions. The whole room goes silent. They're staring at you. And right now, you're either feeling rejected, you're hearing crickets in the room. What do you do? Well, the best advice I can offer you there is come prepared to ask yourself one to two questions. And again, just kind of a disclaimer, of course, if you do it wrong, it's going to sound weird, like you're talking to yourself. That's not what I'm suggesting. The best phrase to do this would be a question I'm typically asked is, or you could say a question we are typically asked is, and then you fill in the blank. And again, I want to just encourage you to make sure you're very strategic about those questions. No more than one to two. Again, it should be a question that can get the thoughts of the group going. But there are some reasons why you want to do this. And it's not just to avoid the crickets and change the dynamic in the room. It's because you got to realize what is happening in that meeting or in that presentation. A few seconds ago, they were in listening mode, and hopefully, if you've done your job correctly, it's been interactive all along. But either way, you're going from a presentation now into kind of turning it over to them and having them participate at a much higher level. So people, I think, need a little bit of time to ramp up into that. The other thing, and think about it when you've been in the audience, somebody asks, does anybody have any questions? And at the time, you didn't have any questions. And someone asks a question that immediately gets you thinking, and now you have a question a few seconds later. So that's what it can do. It can prime the pump. So I think that's important. And then last but not least, you got to remember that sometimes people can get rather bashful. This gives them a little bit of a chance to kind of, again, transition and kind of get maybe their nerves up a little bit so that they can ask the question. The next thing, item number two, this represents just a huge, huge mistake. Don't grade the question, repeat the question. Again, don't grade the question, repeat the question. Grading a question would be, and I've certainly done this mistake myself, by the way, would be when you say to someone, that's a great question. So the problem with that is that, well, first of all, if you then do that, if that's a habit, and you do that on every question, I mean, how could every question be a great question, right? It's going to sound very insincere. I would be very careful with that. The opposite can be true. If you grade one question and you don't grade the others, well, the poor guy that didn't get, well, that's an excellent question, is going to feel like an idiot. So you don't want to do that. You never want any barriers between you and your audience or anything that's going to make them not feel so good. So that's one of the things. But now, I mentioned to you, don't grade the question. Repeat the question. So you're going to repeat the question that they give you, and there's a few reasons why you want to do this. I mean, first of all, it is the mark of a true professional. Whenever I hear people doing that, I know that they've been trained, and they just come across so polished. A lot of people don't do that, by the way. I see a lot of people botch their Q&A, by grading the question and certainly not repeating the question. It's courteous too to the audience members because they get to hear it. You got to realize that most of the people asking the question, they might either be talking too fast. They could be because they're nervous, right? We talk faster when we're nervous. They might be talking too low, maybe because they're a little bit bashful or a little bit shy. Or it might be a very confusing type of question, so it needs to be sort of repeated so everyone can be a part of the experience together. And there's actually one more reason why you would repeat the question, but I want to build a little suspense and make you wait till a little bit later in the podcast. How do you like that for a technique? Item number three. I've done this one mucho times. Beware of pointing. And instead of pointing, what you want to do is you want to use an open hand gesture. But let me tell you the deal with pointing. It could be so easy to either maybe somebody said something that you agree with and you kind of point at him, yeah, what he said or whatever. Not that you're going to say that, but you're going to kind of non-verbally with that finger point do that. Or what you might do is you might use the pointing of a finger to signify, yes, you're the next one up. Let's hear your question, right? The problem with that is that pointing, not so much on a conscious level, I would say it's more on a subconscious level, it brings up some negative imagery. When you think about it, many times when somebody points at you, they're accusing you of something. It has certainly negative imagery. And we never, ever, ever want to do that. And remember, when it hits somebody's subconscious and they can't quite articulate it, it's a bad feeling in this case. And whenever you have a bad feeling about something that you cannot articulate, fight or flight kicks in and you avoid that person. So I want you to think about that. That's a very, very important thing. So I said you're going to use an open hand gesture. So let me explain what that is. You're going to simply, instead of pointing at them, you're going to gesture toward them, hand open, palm toward the ceiling. It is a more inviting and a more welcoming gesture. And again, I want to be very, very clear. Even a more positive gesture, like the open hand gesture, is generally not something that people are conscious of. You're hitting the subconscious. And I really maintain that some of the best relationships we have in our life would be ones that parts of the relationship, anyway, we can't really articulate. It's more of a feeling that we have. And I think if you could attain that in sales or any relationship that you have in your life, I believe you're going to have a much deeper, better relationship. So keep that in mind. Again, don't point, open hand gesture. Let's move on. Sooner or later, you're going to need to buy some time. I don't care how good you are or how polished that you are, you're going to need to buy some time. And certainly, this is the thing that I really like to convey to people that I train, that a few seconds could make the difference between a poor response and a decent response, and even a decent response and just a knock it out of the ballpark response. So a few seconds is really all you need just to kind of align your thoughts. So a few things, one of them you know already, but I want to take it a step further. We've been taught to really embrace the power of a pause before responding. Pausing is very, very important, especially with salespeople, and I'll explain that theory in a minute, because it keeps us from interrupting. And the reason why we interrupt, I believe, the salespeople, it's not because we intentionally have on our things to do list, be rude and interrupt. It's because we become very excited and we're very passionate about what we do. And especially when somebody asks a question that you know you're going to nail this one and that you're going to look like the golden child afterwards, you're chomping at the bit. Next thing you know, you're interrupting someone. But a pause, a strategically placed pause, can serve you very, very well because, first of all, it will buy you time. And again, all you need is a few seconds. I don't want you ever to forget that. A few seconds, you can do incredible things in a few seconds, the way the mind works and how fast you can process thoughts. But the other thing about a pause that you have to realize, and this is really, really important, people have this need to fill silence. It is a nervous habit. Out of nervous energy or what have you, we have a need to fill silence. Most of the time, the mistake is made on behalf of the salesperson is making the mistake. They are the ones filling the silence. What I would really encourage you to do, if you can master that power of the pause, you can have your prospect filling that pause. And in that effort, they might be providing you with just a gem of information, right? Or what they might be doing is, again, providing you with things that you now have time to process because you've bought a few more seconds. So don't ever forget that. There is another thing that you can do. Let's get back to that repeating the question thing. If you get in the habit of repeating every question that is directed toward you, when you hit a moment when you need to buy a few extra seconds, it's not going to look like a sudden change of gears and people size you up and it looks like you're stalling or trying to buy time. So I want you to be very, very conscious of that technique. It is a very good time buying technique. And again, gives you a few extra seconds. I don't care how polished you are, a few extra seconds is definitely going to help you. But also, don't ever hesitate to have someone repeat their question. Because again, it gives you a chance to think it through. It will also help you from misunderstanding something. Because sometimes, again, we're so anxious that we think we hear something and we didn't. And it could make us look less than professional. Certainly not going to make us look as impeccable as we want to be perceived. So I think that's important. Last but not least, don't ever, ever, ever be afraid to ask for an example to help you put it into a context. I have absolutely no problem in slowing down a situation to make sure that I understand it. And again, I'll always put it on me so that they don't feel bad. But again, they might have just rapid fired something at me, might have been a left hook or whatever. And I guess really the final thought on this one is that, and I know that there are mixed opinions about this, if you don't know the answer to a question, I don't think there's anything wrong in telling somebody that. Now, I know that a lot of people get real righteous on this one and say, well, you should know your material inside and out. Of course you should know your material inside and out. But I'm going to tell you what, I've done many presentations and I've been in sales now for 27 years and I get the occasional left hook. And when I don't know an answer to something, I'm going to get it, and I'm going to own up to that. And I think that is the way you go. And also, by the way, we need to be mature enough to realize, okay, I got zinged. Shame on me. I'm not going to let it happen again. So just understand that there are methods that you can use to buy a few extra seconds. That's all you really need. The next one, let's move on. Item number 5. Facilitate your dialogues. Don't just answer a question. Facilitate dialogues. Don't just answer a question. In Q&A, the typical thing, again, they ask you questions, you answer the questions. Now, I want you to stand out. All these little things that I'm throwing at you, when you add them up, in addition to all the other things, that little tiny things that you do, it could just make such a big difference between you and your competitors, and it presents such a cool difference between you and them. So again, what I want you to do is not just answer the question, you're going to facilitate a dialogue. And the way that you do that is that you answer the question. You're always going to answer the question. I don't want you ever, ever, you know, beating around the bush or just not answering the question or intentionally trying to confuse them to get away from the question. Or even worse yet, some of the old school sales books used to say, answer a question with a question. What kind of crap is that? Way to disconnect with people, right? Definitely don't do that. So the way that you facilitate a discussion is that after you answer the question, you're going to then maybe use a phrase like, well, let me turn this one over to the audience. What do you guys think? Does anyone have a different spin? Does anybody have something to add? And then as people start to contribute and throw ideas in there, then what you do is follow it up with additional questions. Like some of my favorites, when somebody says, makes a statement, I might say, well, how so? Give me an example. And again, or I might even say, well, could you take me through that? My best scenario when I'm in a sales meeting is to get their emotions going and get a dialogue going that puts me out of presentation mode and get us all into collaboration mode. The money, to me, is on the side where we collaborate, not where the point where I'm, which I hate that term, pitching them or I'm just going over the top presenting. I want a dialogue. And I will tell you that I've been in situations, it's one of the best compliments I can get as a sales professional, where people afterwards have thanked me and said, you got some things out up onto the surface that we needed to talk about years ago. Thank you. That to me is wonderful because now we are getting momentum. Let's move on. So again, facilitate dialogues. And the final thing is how to wrap all of this up. Again, this one comes from Dale Carnegie. We kind of started with them. We're going to end with them. What they say, which I think is a fantastic technique, again, because it's so simple, you'll use it, is to fire kind of a warning shot that we're going to be wrapping up soon. And the way that you do it professionally is you say, we have time for two more questions. Or you might want to say, well, we have time for three more questions, whatever. But when you get to the final question, again, you want to take control and without being controlling, and you're going to say, who has the final question? Again, you're going to say, who has the final question? And just a couple of other tidbits I want to throw at you. Some of them are going to seem like sales 101. I think it would be a really good idea to review them very, very quickly. The first thing is you really want to be respectful of everyone's time. One of the biggest mistakes that I see with presenters is that, again, they might have some lively people in the audience, but what they're not realizing is that 90% of the rest of them are just looking at their watches, wondering, you know, we're into overtime now, I got other things to do, and they don't want to be rude. I've also seen it where a presenter, and I've been on the receiving end of this one, where the presenter was allotted a certain amount of time, it might be during breakout groups or whatever, and they're is the next presenter waiting, and this person's going into overtime, becoming very disrespectful to the other person. And again, I want you to be impeccable. So what I want to offer you is this, is that when you have a lively group and you've only been allotted a certain amount of time, you always want to acknowledge to your audience that you want to be respectful of their time. Again, if they turn around to you then at that point and say, no, it's cool, go ahead, we've allowed for some extra time, you're golden, go ahead, that's fine. But what you probably want to do, in most cases the way it's going to pan out, is that you're going to say to them, I want to be respectful of your time. I'll be available offline to answer as many questions as you have. I'll be right over here on the side when you're done. Thank them for their time. That's what I would recommend that you do. Again, let them tell you that you're good and you can continue. But again, always be respectful of the time. And the final point that I want to offer you, and this to me is just a huge, huge mistake that a lot of people make, is that you could have the greatest answers in the world, and you could have some of the best ways of structuring your presentations and your dialogues and certainly this Q&A. But if you're not congruent with all of the messages that you send out to people, it's as good as being poor in these areas because you can have a disconnect. Now, I want to be very, very clear what I mean by that. Being congruent with your messaging means total alignment of your visual, your vocal, and your verbal messaging. And what I mean by that, again, would be it could be things from my facial mannerisms to how I look at the audience and to my voice, the tonality. It could be the pace in which I'm speaking. They all have to be in alignment. And I'll give you a very obvious one, and you know this one. But again, I want to start very, very obvious. One of the things where I see people screw up again, they're asked a question and then they break eye contact. I see that a lot of times, just as an aside, when somebody starts negotiating price with someone, immediately the eye contact gets broken. It sends such a horrible message to people, again, on a subconscious level. The eye contact one is not even subconscious. People detect it and they could see that one miles away. So I want you to be very, very careful of it. Again, go for alignment. Now, there's one thing that you can do, and I highly recommend this, is that I'm a big advocate of videotaping your practice. Again, you're not going to go into a real live meeting with this, but sales managers, in my opinion, this is what you should be doing in your sales meetings. I mean, to go off on a tangent for a moment, I see so many sales meetings where a sales manager is going around the table and Mary's presenting her numbers, or the sales manager's talking about Mary's numbers. Then we go to John, and trust me when I tell you, John and Mary could give a damn about each other's numbers. And certainly not to the point that they're going to sacrifice valuable time in the field to go through that fire drill. It is just a poor use of time. I would recommend that you have an educational component in your sales meeting. This could be one of those educational components. You could kind of do a Q&A in front of the sales team, videotape it. The videotaping is so critical, and it's made such a difference in my presentation skills because people aren't aware of that alignment that I was telling you. They have no idea. I wasn't, and again, I do this professionally, and every time to this day, that I see myself on some kind of a videotape. I see things that I just miss completely. So you want to do that and get better and better at this stuff. And really the final bit of advice that I have for you, and this, you've heard me say this before, all of these tips are completely useless if they stay in your head or if they stay in your journal or stay in that pad and paper, that pad of paper. It's useless to you. You have to get out there and try these things and just commit to getting better and better and better. So with that, we have several ideas today to help you get more effective at your Q&A. Again, I want to reiterate that you don't have to be some public speaking pro to utilize these things. These can be utilized in meetings. They can be utilized in internal meetings, external meetings. If you want to get fancier than that, in your lunch and learns, seminars, webinars, conference calls, lunch and learns, all of these things can certainly be utilized. With that, my name is Paul Castain from YourSalesPlaybook.com. I'm inviting you to do a few things. First of all, stop by the website, YourSalesPlaybook.com. Sign up for the free sales tips. I never get cute and do anything with your email or spam you or anything like that. I truly give no strings attached. I promise you that. Next thing, stop by our LinkedIn group, Sales Playbook. We just hit 18,500 members. Again, I never allow spammers or self-promoters. I run a real tight ship over there, and I'm telling you, if you stop by, I think you'll have a blast, and you might just learn a few things in the process. I certainly do. I never leave that group empty-handed, man. I'm always learning things. And finally, we just launched our Facebook fan page. Please stop by. And if you want information on that, if you stop by the website, yoursalesplaybook.com, there is a link. Come by, like us so that you can continue to interact with Your Sales Playbook. With that, Paul Castain, wishing you an amazing week ahead. Go get them.